Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
Now, it's 21 years since the US, under President George W. Bush, opened its controversial Guantanamo detention facility at its military base in Cuba. Since then, the prison has housed suspects captured during the so-called War on Terror, which followed the 9/11 attacks. It operates on a military basis and doesn't guarantee the same rights as regular US courts. At its height, Guantanamo housed nearly 800 detainees. Today, there are just 30. And in recent months, for the first time, the US has granted access to a UN official to investigate conditions at the facility, and she joins us now. You're very welcome, Fionnuala Ní-Éalán, UN Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights While Countering Terrorism. You're very welcome to the programme. This is a facility, obviously, we've been hearing about for decades now. You finally got inside those gates. Can you describe to us what you found?
Sure. So the official visit that my mandate conducted took place earlier this year, and it involved 4 days at the detention facility. And part of the agreement between the US government and my mandate for the visit was that I would have full access to all of the current and prior sites of detention within the facility. So that included Camp X-Ray, Camp Delta, Camp Iguana, which is now no longer exists, Camp 4, 5, 6, and 7, as well as to a cross-section of both high-value and non-high-value detainees for interview. So that was the terms of the agreement, which was agreed and allowed me, as a result, to issue the report that I issued some weeks ago addressing the conditions of confinement for these men, their current physical, mental health, as well as other aspects of their detention, including the legal proceedings that they're subject to.
So in terms of the prisoners that remain, what did you find when you got access to them?
Sure. So I think, as many people may know, of this group of detainees, there were 34 when I visited. Most of them, the majority of them, have never been charged with any crime. And in fact, a large number of them, currently almost 20 of them, have been cleared by release from the PRB, or Periodic Review Board, which is a legal structure established by the US. These men have committed no crime. They've been found responsible for nothing, but they remain in indefinite detention in the facility. And I raise a number of profound concerns about the physical and mental health of the men. I found that the entire structure of detention, if you want, experience for men, is defined by arbitrariness, by rules that change from day to day. And in particular for torture victim survivors, this fundamental and profound arbitrariness, not knowing what the rules will be from one period to another, creates enormous uncertainty, suffering, and so on. I also found that overall, pulling together a whole range of things, including their lack of attention in respect of their torture rehabilitation, and the fact that they are aging, elderly, some of them disabled men, and that the health facilities are inadequate for their needs, and therefore that they are experiencing cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment under international law.
How long have some of the people that you visited, how long have they been there? I mean, are some of them there for the last 20 years?
Indeed. So some of the people that have been transferred who remain in custody have spent almost 2 decades in custody. These are men who have had limited access to their families. And I would say that one of the most profound things for every single man I spoke to was their lack of relationship or capacity to have meaningful relationship with their family. They haven't seen their families in 20 years or so. Children have grown up without them. Parents have died. And again, bearing in mind that the vast majority of these individuals have not been charged with any crime whatsoever, their only ill fortune was for many of them to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and to be unable to be released to their country of nationality or to be resettled in another country.
We've heard reports for years about abuses of these prisoners, forced feedings, detainees being beaten. Is there any way of knowing if abuses of that nature are continuing?
Well, I think my report is very clear. And I'd say, honestly, of course, and all of the men I spoke with, every single one of them also said, conditions have improved enormously since the darkest days of the detention facility. They eat communally, they can pray together. There, of course, there's a significant improvement from the days of interrogation and enhanced interrogation at the site. But that said, there are still, as I said, multiple challenges for these men. For example, their names are never used. They're called by numbers. So imagine a person who's never been charged with a crime, who has been released, told that they are actually not a security threat, but has not gone home, and they haven't had their name used for 20 years. They're called by numbers. They're shackled when they move within the prison facility, including when they met me. Many of them have been engaged in hunger striking and, of course, have then been subject to forced feeding against their will. And as a result, have a number of serious medical and urinary and other types of complaints. Many of them suffer deep psychological trauma. They were tortured. They have never had torture rehabilitation. So they live, of course, in the place where this happened to them. And of course, notwithstanding that conditions have improved, those who guard them still wear the same uniform as the people who tortured them in previous decades.
Just finally, Fionnuala, in response to your report, the Biden administration has said that it's working to reduce the number of inmates at the prison and eventually to close it. They acknowledge your recommendations, but they say, and I'll quote, "We're committed to providing safe and humane treatment for detainees at Guantanamo in full accordance with international and US domestic law." They continue, "Detainees live communally and prepare meals together, receive specialised medical and psychiatric care, are given full access to legal counsel and communicate regularly with family members." I just wonder what you think of that and what you'd like to see happen now.
Well, I think I take positively, first of all, that the visit has happened. My mandate had a long and sustained engagement with the US government to allow this visit, and President Biden is the first president to let an independent expert in with no restraint on my capacity to visit the entirety of the site and to speak to these men freely without supervision. And the second thing I would say is I take it positively that the US government has agreed to look at my recommendations. But I think the totality of the report makes clear that while there's a commitment to humane treatment, in practice that is not met, and that there are legal obligations to the detainees, but also to the men who've been transferred. It's not just these 30 men who are left, but the hundreds of men who went to other countries who never received medical or psychological care, many of them still suffering to this day without compensation and without the capacity to remedy the wrong that was done to them.
All right. Well, it's very interesting to speak to you. And thank you so much for joining us this evening. That's Fionnuala Ní Éalán, who's UN Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights While Countering Terrorism.